Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Goodwill Wrestling. I'm here with my co-host, Rob Naylor. Rob, how are you doing?
Hey, Will. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, buddy. Well, Rob, last week we did our show in two parts. Make sure you listen to parts one and part two on Terry Gordy. So hopefully tonight's show we'll just do one show and you can just listen to the whole thing at once. Hopefully we won't have any technical difficulties. But, Rob, tonight's topic is the Steiner Brothers. I know you're a huge fan of the Steiner Brothers, and I think we'll start it off by asking when was the first time you saw the Steiner Brothers?
Yeah, man, Steiner Brothers, love them. I'd say the first time I saw Steiner, well, a Steiner would have to be Rick Steiner, and the first time I saw Rick Steiner was UWF, but the first time I remember reading about Rick Steiner was probably 1985, and he wasn't Rick Steiner, he was Rob Rick Steiner, Rex Steiner. I think their legit last name is Rex Steiner, but he was Rob Rex Steiner. He was like an undercard guy in Mid-South.
And what was his impression? What was the impression he made on you?
He didn't make an impression because I read about him. I just knew who he was, and when I saw Rick Steiner, I actually knew who Rick Steiner was. I thought Rick Steiner was awesome. I saw Rick Steiner probably first time in 1987 on TV, and he was absolutely awesome. He had, like, chiseled his shit. Like, he actually got a lot softer over the years, which may have been better for his health, but whatever. But he was jacked as shit back in, like, 1987, and he wore, like, biker shorts, like, crazy, different kind of pattern biker shorts, so that always stood out. And he was in Hot Stuff International, Hyatt Incorporated. But the thing with Rick Steiner is I then found out more about Rick Steiner after I saw Rick Steiner, and I saw that he was tutored by Buzz Sawyer back in, like, 85, 86 in UWF. I don't know how much that is on tape, like Rick Steiner with Buzz Sawyer as his little mentor, but you could definitely see a lot of Buzz Sawyer in Rick Steiner's wrestling. Like the power slam, like the spark plug, the whole, they have like very similar physiques. I don't think Buzz Sawyer threw a clothesline, but Rick Steiner's clothesline is the stuff of legend. But I was a huge Rick Steiner fan from the start.
No, I think I agree with you. In fact, you had the dog face gremlin, you had the mad dog Buzz Sawyer, so you know, you even took the dog from Buzz Sawyer, you know.
Yeah,
and then, you know, one of my first memories of Rick Steiner is I don't think I saw him when he was Rob Rex Steiner. Like you said, I think I saw him about the same time, you know, when he entered UWF as a tag team with Sting, you know, being led by Eddie Gilbert. Now, what were your impressions of that tag team, man, the Sting-Rick Steiner tag team?
Sting-Rick Steiner made a lot of sense. It was right after Rock, the Blade Runner, left, so Rick Steiner was a quicker study than he was, apparently. So I like that team a lot, and I always thought they should be able to kick the shit out of Bret Armstrong and Tim Horner. So when they when they wrestled them, you know, I was like, yeah, well, who's going to win this? And, oh, no, wait, yeah, I guess they wrestled them once. I think they actually lost the belt to them. But the team that they wrestled, who I erroneously referred to as Armstrong and Horner, was Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton, because I think they beat them for the tag team belts, if I'm not mistaken. No, Sting and Eddie Gilbert beat Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton tagging though. Like, I'm losing my mind here, but I think Steiner and Sting had the belts later, but Eddie Gilbert and Sting were originally the champions. I could be wrong.
That's not my forte. Title histories is not my strong suit, so I'm gonna have to just agree that you're right and everybody else is wrong because I have no
idea.
Oh,
that's the way things should be. Yeah, agree that I'm right. That works for me.
You know, I remember Sting with the Blade Runners, and you know, at that time in my life, any team that had face paint was cool with me. So I was kind of bummed that the Blade Runners were no more.
Yeah,
what's
face
that?
Paint steroids.
Yeah,
Come on, man.
So I thought, wow, this is a team that could give the Road Warriors a run for their money, you know, because they're unstoppable. And then the Blade Runners just kind of up and disappeared. So when they teamed Rick Steiner with Sting, I was like, well, where the fuck is Steiner's face paint, man? You know, I mean, I'm sure you could get a cool little graphic going on his face, but it never happened. So I was really disappointed. I don't think I had the affinity for that team that I should. You know, the love affair that you might have had because. Well, let's face it, man, you know, only one guy with face paint isn't that cool. You know, two guys with face paint, much cooler tag team.
Ah, I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay, because I thought Rick Steiner was way better than the other Blade Runner. And Rick Steiner with his suplexes, and I don't know, I just liked him better. And it was weird, he was always, like, the third guy in every group he was in early in the day. Like, when he was with Rotundo and Solomon, he was the third guy. When he was at Sting and Eddie, he was, like, the third guy. But he was always the guy that would get in there and do work. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be the guy that gets the job done. But I liked him a lot. He was kind of underrated for a while there. When NWA merged with UWF, that's when he really got kind of lost in the shuffle for a little while.
No, I agree.
I remember he would just randomly have matches on the undercards during the bashes. And he's like, okay, what's he up to now?
Well, it's kind of weird, too. Now, we talked about this before. But initially, he wasn't mentally challenged, you know. He wasn't the slow Steiner. He was kind of a surfer guy, you know. And I think being the special, improper way, but, you know, fuck it, he was retarded, okay? And
Let me be the improper one. Like Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder said, you never go full retard. But it really worked for Rick Steiner because when he turned slow, his career just skyrocketed. Like, it
exactly.
Really worked for him.
Whereas he didn't look like a surfer guy, like Sting. Like Sting, you could Sting's a surfer guy, right? He's out there on the waves. But Rick Steiner just never looked like that. He looked like he'd be someone who'd be working under a car, you know, or a mechanic or something, and you know.
Exactly.
You know, and then fucking just kind of like lose the surfer image or whatever they were going for, you know, meant a lot more. Now Rob, you told me, okay, I had to mention this. Talk about the way he taped his fingers. What did that mean to you?
Yeah, man, like Rick Steiner had this wacky finger tape. Like he would tape if you do like the whole Vader sign, or I don't know what the Star Trek people might call it, something else, and you do like Vader time, and you put your hand like that, and like the two fingers go together, and the other two fingers go together. Well, he would like tape them together and shit. It was really weird. I don't really know if there was ever any reasoning behind it, but I always thought it was weird. I was like, well, that's bad. How is he going to grip anything? But yeah, he taped his two fingers really oddly. Like, I don't know. I normally don't make a point to notice finger tape on professional wrestlers, but Rick Steiner's always for that.
You think he had like webbed fingers or something, man? That you know,
who the fuck knows? I don't know, man. It's just the little things and the details that you got to delve into. So if anyone knows anything about that, let us know. But like, yeah, he'd always tape his fingers oddly. So I don't know. But yeah, you had to bring that up. That was definitely something I had to have written in the show.
Yeah, people, just so you know, Rob and I don't do this off the fly. A lot of details and planning go into this beforehand, as you can
tell. Yeah, show prep.
Very professional ship here that we run. So, Well, speaking of pre-planning, another thing we talked about, I actually didn't know this. I remember the headlines had Dr. Death in it, but it was there was a car wreck in 1986 where Dr. Death, ripped off a door and tore the roof off to save somebody that was already dead or whatever. And you told me that Rick Steiner was the other guy who helped. What do you remember
about
that?
Yeah. Rick Steiner and Dr. Death saved some dude, and then two other people ended up dying. But, like, I guess they saw a car on fire after a car wreck, and they went over and miraculously pulled the doors off and, you know, cleaned house. But I remember on TV, I think Bill Watts, they gave the angle of Dr. Death being, like, the guy that saved the day. But, like, in real life, I guess Rick Steiner was the other person involved there. So, what a nice guy. Way to go, Rick Steiner.
Yeah, thumbs up for you, Rick Steiner. Now, we talked about when we first saw Rick. When did you first see Scott?
Okay, I remember the first time I saw Scott's name. It was in a wrestling magazine, surprise, surprise. And he was wrestling in some promotion in, like, Detroit or Michigan area. And he was wrestling the Great Wojo, who was a household name, of course, up in the Midwest area. And him and the Great Wojo had a feud going, and I just was like, fuck, you know, Scott Steiner, who's that? What if he's Rick Steiner's brother? You never really knew back in those days. You just read a name. Like, you didn't know. Like, fuck, I still don't know if Vic Steamboat's Rick Steamboat's shoot brother. So, you know, I was like, I wonder if they're related.
If anyone could help us with that, let us know if Vic Steamboat is Rick Steamboat's shoot brother. We'd appreciate
it. Yeah, I do know that Ricky Santana is not related to Tito, so...
Yeah, that fucked me up as a little kid, man. I really did think that was Tito's little brother getting a break, but yeah.
Poor Ricky.
How bummed was that? But I think one is Mexican and the other is Cuban, right?
Why not? Makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess when you're a kid, you don't see that, you know, you just see last names and automatically say,
no, you
know,
you don't see
from different countries.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's ridiculous. But yeah,
but,
I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I still don't know.
Man, but I actually don't remember even seeing Scott until he hit WCW. So you know, we'll talk about Scott in a little bit. We'll talk about you know, his Memphis run. When we were doing an 80s project on Memphis, I got a chance to see a lot of Scott on TV in 89. 88, you and I had a dispute about this. I swore that he was just kind of like a jobber to the stars. You know, he'd win a couple of matches, but then he'd always, you know, take the pin against better wrestlers. But you're telling me that they had high hopes for this guy, even in 1988.
Scott Steiner had a very good run in CWA in, like, 1987, 88. 88, I think it was. But, yeah, because him and Dustin were a tag team. He beat guys like Gary Young all the time. Like, they obviously had him in the plan since he won the Renegade Rampage tournament. Like, that Renegade Rampage thing ran, like, all fucking year because they had that tobacco thing on the ring, which I always loved. But, you know, he ended up winning it. I believe he beat Robert Fuller in the finals because I remember in a wrestling magazine I got a picture of Scott Steiner holding the fucking giant check for, you know, 2 million cans of dip or whatever. Well, I don't know what they gave the winner, but the Renegade Rampage people were there, and I was like, oh, Jerry Calhoun was there. And I was like, okay, great. And by that time, they actually said Scott Steiner, brother of Rick Steiner or whatever. So I was like, oh, cool. But, like, I guess the first time I saw Scott Steiner actually on TV and not in a magazine was, I think he was a second for Rick at Starrcade 88. I could be off on that, but I remember them saying, you know, I remember them, they introduced him at some point. But, you know, he wasn't of much consequence till the middle of 89, I don't think.
Right. Well, I do remember in Memphis, this was early 1989, he teamed with Solomon Grundy, and they actually won, like, the Memphis tag belts or CWA tag belts or whatever. And remember that we featured that on the Memphis set. So, you know, I know that they gave him a little push. I just don't remember him being of much consequence. Like, I don't remember him having, like, a feud with Jerry Lawler or Bill Dundee
like, the whole promotion was based around Lawler, Dutch, and Dundee for how many fucking years. So, like, no, I don't think that many people got up in that upper tier. I mean, I don't know if you could call everybody who didn't get that shot. Like, fuck, Robert Fuller. Jerry Lawler was scared to death of Robert Fuller. Fuller never was up there. But to me, like, if I was watching Memphis, I didn't want it just to be the Jerry Lawler show. I didn't mind it when, like, Robert Fuller would have an angle going. But I never considered him, like, a underneath guy. So, like, Scott Steiner did a little better than you think. Like, I don't know. He wasn't in there with Lawler, but he was also a babyface. I think Dundee was a good guy in there, too. So. Well, I don't know. What the fuck was Dundee doing in 1988? Was he there?
Oh, man. No. Yeah. Rocky he was Johnson. Tag team with Lawler. Him and Lawler won the AWA tag team titles.
In 88, huh? Because I remember 87.
87, 88, 89. It's all blurred to me. That whole Memphis, Texas, AWA hybrid, you know, it all kind of blurs together for me. So, you know, but I thought it was 88. I could be wrong. I'm sure he was there, man. I'd have to look and remember what feud Dundee was doing at that time. Because I know in 86, Dundee was in a, what was it? He was in a NWA. And then in 87, I think he came back, right, to Memphis. And so he might be right back in 87.
George Barnes, all those guys were there in 87. And then I thought he probably was around. So I actually remember when Lawler turned heel, he fought Dundee and gave him a pile driver. So, yeah, okay. He was probably there in 88. I'm not sure what he was doing half the time, but he was there. You're right.
Yeah. Now, you know, and this is kind of flipped over time, but one of the things that, you know, is that Scott has always been pretty ripped, right? Pretty big guy. Like, he knew this guy was juicing early on. He was pretty ripped. But it was kind of amazing how ripped Rick Steiner was early in his career, you know, compared to how later. We mentioned it briefly at the top of the show, but let's see if you had anything more to add to that, like Rick Steiner's
physique
there.
Changed. I remember from like 87 to 88, he got really softer. And then like from like 88 to 89, into 90, he was still the same way. And then somewhere around like 91, 92, he got jacked again. And of course, that also corresponded with a pulled bicep. But, regardless, you know, he was one of those Nikita Koloff-esque wrestlers who you'd see one time, you'd be like, oh, look at him all jacked up. He must enjoy the gym. And then you'd see him like 5 months later and they'd be considerably smaller. Much like when the Ultimate Warrior came back after he quote-unquote died at WrestleMania. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. And he showed up looking like Brian Pillman. And everyone's like, what the fuck happened to Warrior?
No shit. Well, since we're talking about Rick,
you know,
Steiner,
what, real quick, you know what's fucked up? What's fucked up is when the Warrior came back at the Sid Vicious Hulk Hogan WrestleMania, my best friend was the biggest Ultimate Warrior fan ever. And when the Warrior came back looking like Brian Pillman, my best friend tore down all of his Ultimate Warrior posters and fucking completely disassociated himself with him because he thought he looked like a fucking wimp. And it's fucked
no
up because
shit.
It wasn't. We didn't, I don't think we even knew the word steroids at the time, but it just goes to show you the power of steroids on the young wrestling fans in the 80s. Because, like, God forbid someone show up looking less jacked because they'd be like, oh, he's not spending the time for no monsoon. Instead, he goes to the gym. You know, it's always weird like that. But
no, you're right. I've said it 100 times, man, that, you know, I couldn't fathom how Tully and Arn didn't automatically lose to the Road Warriors every single time, or why guys like the Midnight Express were even a threat to the Road Warriors, you know,
the only guy I was really less of a fan of when he got off the sauce was probably Nikita Koloff. Because, like, Nikita Koloff was the Russian goddamn nightmare. He scared the shit out of me. He clotheslined Magnum with a chain. And then he turned good and, like, the funny thing was, he started teaming with Dusty, and I always just assumed as a kid, before I knew anything about steroids, that he just didn't have the same ethic at the gym because he was hanging around Dusty. And, like, then he just got small and weak-looking. And then he grew hair, which is, like, the ultimate betrayal of being a Russian. No Russians
have
hair. So I was like, what the fuck? So, yeah, that was always weird to me.
Yeah, I think the hair growing thing just kind of ruined it for me. You know, I mean, I just thought he was naturally bald. I thought
they were
bred bald. You know, I thought fucking they grew up bald. You know, fucking
dude. Yeah, if you're listening to this and you're Russian, first of all, high five. Second of all, if you have hair, shave it immediately. Thanks.
Well, unless you're a chick, man. If you're a woman, it's okay to keep.
No,
hair.
Man, that's hot.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't know. Serena pulled it off. Hot rod.
I still remember watching the very first Star Trek movie, and like the main woman in that movie had a bald head, and you know, I'm a fucking 7-year-old kid at the time, or 8-year-old kid, and you know, for some reason I found it attractive, you know, 8 years old, 7 years old, so you know, yeah, I guess if you're Russian and you're a woman, yeah, shave your head too, you know.
Yeah, man, when you're a little kid, like, you'll find all kinds of weird shit attractive, but we won't go into that. what's the next topic coming up?
We're going to talk about, Snyder, was in UWF, and then it became the NWA, you know, when the NWA swallowed up Watts' UWF. And his early run there, what do you remember of that?
I remember thinking he was awesome. I remember he had a run with the Florida belt, and I think he only had the Florida belt because Mike Rotundo gave it to him. We're skipping over some shit, though. When him and Sting and Eddie Gilbert were a team, Eddie Gilbert turned on Sting, Terry Taylor and Eddie Gilbert became a tag team, and Terry Taylor and Eddie Gilbert were, like, one of the greatest, like, 1-2 punches in all of heel history, I'll say. And Steiner was there as the third person, and I remember, obviously, the Battle of New Orleans is one of the best things ever in wrestling.
Yeah.
And for the uneducated, that's when, or the uninitiated, we'll say, when Sting and Shane Douglas and... Yeah, Sting and Shane Douglas wrestled, I believe, Taylor and Gilbert, and then Rick Steiner did a run in, pile drove Shane Douglas, breaking that young man's neck, which left Eddie and Terry Taylor brawling with Chris Adams and Sting all over the fucking New Orleans, whatever the place name was. But they were brawling. Maybe it was the Superdome. Who the fuck knows? But they were brawling all over the place. And, like, I had never seen any Tupelo concession stand things. So I had no idea what the fuck was up. I just thought it was wild. There were people running away from them. And they did lots of cool wide shots with the camera, and it just looked fucking crazy. So, like, that was the shit. If you ever want to see some killer brawling, watch that. Eddie Gilbert was an unbelievable brawler. Sting was awesome as a brawler. And Chris Adams and fucking Terry Taylor definitely brought it, too. And the promos from that time, too, are just ridiculous. Like, any of the Terry Taylor, Eddie Gilbert promos are money. But, like, Rick Steiner was a minor portion of that, but I'll include him there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that was kind of the knock on Steiner, right, that he wasn't a promo guy, that he couldn't talk. You know, that just, you know, what are you going to do with him? He has to have a mouthpiece at all times, and that's why he was always, like, stuck in these either tag teams or these little groups like Hot Stuff International or the Varsity Club, because, you know, he wasn't strong on the mic. And then, when he first came into the NWA, I don't remember him doing much. I mean, he talked about the Florida title, and I don't even remember that at the time. I don't know if it was just because it didn't interest me or whatnot, but I have no recollection of that whatsoever. To me, he really made an impression when he joined the Varsity Club. And that was kind of when I thought, okay, this is when I can take this guy seriously. And that's when they really started pimping him as a wrestler from Michigan, you know, national champion or whatever lies they were spewing. Or maybe he was national champion, I don't know. But that's when I was like, oh, wait, he's a real wrestler. You know, I got to take this guy seriously.
Yeah, right before that, I remember he had a match with Barry Windham on the Great American Bash tape.
Yeah.
And he was wearing his biker shorts. And his cool freaking orange knee pads and his fucking taped fingers. He just looked all weird. But that match, the wrestling purists would give it 2 stars and say it was nothing special. But fuck all those guys, because it was awesome. There was like a ridiculously cool backdrop on Barry Windham. Rick Steiner hit, in my opinion, in my recollection, the first Steiner line ever. Seriously, the goddamnest clothesline you're ever going to see in your life. And Barry Windham just fucking eats this thing like you would not believe. Steiner threw these really cool overhead punches his entire career. Lots of those on display in that match, if I recall correctly. It's been like 15 or 20 years since I've seen this. But it's a really fucking awesome match. And I believe it was just, the ending was like Steiner going to slam Windham off the top and Windham catching him in the cradle or something. But like, super cool. I always liked Barry Windham wrestling Rick Steiner. I thought that dynamic was fucking perfect. So, yeah, I mean, that was really good shit. And then he would make his way to the Varsity Club, which is obviously Rotundo, Sullivan, and Rick Steiner. And he was like the fucking idiot of the crew. That's when he kind of went a little special route. And that was always really, really good TV. Like, I've not seen any of that shit in probably 20 years either. Wait, what's the decade? What? 2010, right? Yeah, it's been 22 years, actually. I've not seen it since it happened. So, like, that shit was awesome, though. I just remember them browbeating Steiner all the time. Rotundo just gave him a fucking belt like he's some kind of idiot. And I grew to love Rick Steiner. As a 10-year-old kid at the time, I was like, oh, why are you picking on Rick Steiner? So when he finally turned, holy shit. Like, I was so stoked. But even before he turned, you know, the Varsity Club was really badass. They'd be repping Michigan and repping Syracuse. And when Doc came in, you know, Oklahoma. And Kevin Sullivan was a games master with them. I just thought that was a really fucking cool angle. Real cool group. And I really wish they even got more mileage out of it than they did, but whatever.
Well, I want to bring up something because you mentioned the watching the Steiner-Windham match on the Great American Bash videotape. Well, my problem is that I would have loved to have picked that videotape up, but my mother wasn't going to pay $49.95 or whatever price that they were charging for those videotapes.
Well, mine didn't either. Let me tell you, I was lucky enough to have like 1,000 video rental stores in my town, and like there was only one of them that had it. But when I would find an NWA tape in my town, it would be akin to winning the goddamn lottery. It was that rare. So, like, it was always a moment when that would occur. But, man, you don't even want to know the excitement in young Bobby Naylor's body when he fucking saw the Roadies and Nikita and Dusty and the fucking Horsemen in a cage, like, on that cover. Holy shit. It was like when my mom let me rent Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which I think was PG-13 at the time. It was just like, no, really? I didn't know it could be like this. It was just a wonderful moment in time that I remember very fondly. But, yeah, man, those videotapes back in the day, that was a find. I remember one time, I'm only quoting the tape, I saw, like, it was always like Coliseum Video, Coliseum Video, Coliseum Video. You know, Boopers, Meats, and Body Slams, all of them, WWF, WWF, WWF. Well, this stupid one horse, these bunch of carnies came into our town selling bootleg shit one time, and they had, like, a video rental place right next to it. And they had, like, IWGP 1986, Dick Murdoch and Noki, and I'm like, what? And then there was, like, this Japanese women's wrestling tape called, and again, if I apologize, Slant Eyed Slaughter, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yes.
And, like, I had to get all this shit. I was like, this is the greatest place ever. And they got busted by the cops and went away really fast, but not before I, like, rented every goddamn videotape they had. So, like, I don't know what you can really say now. I guess now with the kids, you can just say it's like when you really want to see a show and it pops up on Pro Wrestling Torrents and you can download it for free immediately. But, like, it was a scavenger hunt back in the day. That was almost part of the fun of the hobby, but I do remember numerous victorious days at the video store picking up NWA tapes.
Yeah, you call it fun. I call it torture, okay? Because, you know, when you're a kid, when you don't have a lot of money growing up, I mean, you only dream about that stuff. And I lived in a big city, but I don't even think Blockbuster was, like, a huge deal at the time. So, you know, I don't even remember hearing about video stores. You know, we taped all of our movies off of, like, not HBO, but, like, you know, TNN or TBS at the time or WGN. And, you know, we'd fast forward through the commercials or whatever. And then that's how we watched videos. We taped it off TV, and then we'd watch it over and over and over until it broke. But, you know, all of those videotapes that Ric Flair was pimping in the commercials, I could only dream of, you know. The PWI Great American Bash in 85 fucking might as well have been sold in China, dude. I couldn't have touched it, you know. So, you know, I just wish there was a go back and then, you know, bother my parents. Come on, you got to take me to the video store. I promise we won't get any late fees. You know, but knowing my ass, I would have probably had like fucking $300 in late fees, fucking got slapped by my mom or something for not taking the video back. But you know, some of the ways.
We're on this
tangent
about videotaping shit. I got to throw a couple stories in. Number one, one of the reasons I don't have any of this Steiner, fucking Rotundo, Sullivan, Varsity Club footage is because we got our first VCR in 1988, and what a moment it was in the Naylor family household, because my sister and I were fucking losing our shit. We were losing our shit over this VCR, right? Like, holy fuck, we got a VCR. So we have this VCR, and I tape all my NWA religiously. Not a fucking second of that bullshit second-rate WWF. I would tape NWA like a motherfucker. We only got worldwide, so I'd only tape one show a week. But I would tape it like I currently have ADD status, so I'd only tape certain cool moves I knew were coming up. Or, like, I missed a ton of shit, too. But, like, anyone who looks at any of my old tapes would laugh their ass off because it's so chopped up. But, I would tape angles and promos and a lot of the Steiner stuff. And, like, I remember the Steiners and the Midnight Express had a six-man match for some reason. And I was like, what the fuck? And, like, Steiner dropped a dude on his head. I just thought it was, like, the coolest mix of wrestlers. But I'll never see that again unless, you know, I get a TV set of that again. Like, maybe I will see it again. But it was so – I was so pissed off at my sister. It's like the Nickelodeon fucking whatever show
you
they
can't
had
do that on
the
television.
USA – Dance Party USA. She taped some fucking bullshit ass show over my goddamn wrestling, and she got her hair pulled out for it, I believe. Violent
okay,
family back in 1988.
She taped over your NWA with USA's Night Flight, something like that.
Oh, Dance Party and Night Flight. Ronda Shearer. I don't even know what the fuck happened. I was in such a fit of rage. So, like, the last tape I remember ever having was from, like, 1989. But, like, 88, man,
wow.
I remember. Yeah, like, my 89 tape still, like, that. I think as of a couple of years ago, it still works. But, like, my mom taped, like, General Hospital that same year over some of that shit, too, which pissed me off.
Yeah,
but,
and your sister still has a bald spot from 20 years ago. Huh?
You knew it was 1989, though, when the Sting versus Muda match is interrupted by roller games, and they'd have, like, a concert during the middle, and one of the songs was Heaven Isn't Too Far Away by Warrant, and, like,
oh, God.
I fucking hate that.
Was it Bullet Boy Smooth Up In You?
Oh, that would have been on there, too, but you can never have enough cock rock on your fucking 80s VHS tape.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
God.
Man, me and Will, for that inside joke here, me and Will had a conversation the other day where we tried to name as many hair metal bands as we possibly could, and we did it quite fucking well.
Tell them which one we forgot. Tell them which band we forgot, Rob.
We forgot about Striper, and as a young Catholic child back in the day, I totally should have remembered Striper, because God love them. They were such fun-loving, God-fearing dudes playing guitar, but, anyway, back to the fucking
as
point.
A young wannabe devil
out.
Worshipper, I was surprised I forgot. Yeah. I thought it was cool to draw little devils on my fucking folders in school, yeah. With little fucking, like Dio, if you turn Dio's name upside down, it's spelled devil. Do you remember that?
I do not remember any of that shit. That's crazy.
Yeah, look at
I feel whenever
covers,
I
man.
Talk about
turn it upside down, man, fucking spells devil.
All right, I'll take your word for that.
Rest in peace, Ronnie James. But, yeah, we forgot about Striper, man. We named them all, too. We had Trickster. We had fucking Kix. We had a Danger. Man,
enough,
we fucking
enough.
Threw it down.
Fuck.
Enough.
Yeah, we did.
Fucking Faster Pussycat. Man, fuck. Okay, we're not going to name them all, Rob. We're going to keep going.
Hey,
yeah,
I'm not. I'll throw in Whitesnake, but that's it. But,
okay,
yeah,
White
so Rick
Line.
Steiner was
I'll raise your
White Snake
with White Line.
Yeah. Rick Steiner was not in a cock rock band in the 80s. So let's just talk about the band he did join, which was Varsity Club. And like you said, the turn on Rick Steiner was really well done. And Rick Steiner was over as fuck because everyone, much like myself, really got behind Rick Steiner. We're huge fans. And Mecha Dream, Dusty Rhodes, secretly is going to give him the world belt, I guess, at Starrcade. But that didn't happen, and Dusty got fired, and Ric Flair beat Lex Luger.
Yeah, well, now I want to ask you because I'm, like I said, you know, it's pretty sad. You know, as a student of history, I'm not very good with dates. Now, did he win the title and turn face before or after he was talking to Alex?
Oh, you're talking to Rick Steiner. Rick Steiner was talking to Alex before that shit. Rick Steiner had Alex and he would talk to his hand on interviews. Alex was like a little thing that Rick Steiner drew on his hand. But, yeah, that was before, and, like, Sullivan and Rotundo would always get pissed off that he would talk to Alex because, you know, they didn't have any room for a talking hand in their group at the time, but, yeah. But Alex stayed with them when he turned good guy.
I was about to say, did they say what university Alex went to? Like, did they make
no,
it up that, that Rick went to Michigan and Alex went to, like, Ohio State or something? Nothing like
no,
that?
No, I don't remember Alex having any kind of diploma from anywhere. Alex existed.
But
that, I like that one.
No, I will say, though, that I recently watched that title win against Rotunda, and I can only say that any wrestling company of the last 10 years, I mean, and I mean 10 years, could only beg for the kind of reaction that fucking Rick Steiner got when he beat Rotunda for that belt. I mean, the crowd was fucking insane. I mean,
yeah.
The highlight of that show. I mean, I guess there are matches over the last 10 years that might have gotten that kind of heat, but you know, even like some of these WrestleManias that have been held in like 75,000 people, you know, 50,000 people, 40,000 people, whatever, from like the last 5 years, I don't think anything on any of those shows have gotten the kind of reaction that match got. You know, disagree, agree, what do you think?
Yeah, that reaction was hot. I remember that reaction being really good. I remember the reaction when Windham and Luger won the belt from Kelly and Arn at the Clash in 88, being insane. But yeah, that was a really hot year. That was like one of the last years where crowd heat was really fucking apeshit. Like I thought as the 90s came in, crowd heat died down considerably. But,
well, I think a lot of that was placement too. Like, you know, they would, you know, like they would do the Disney tapings. And, you know, there was a lot of good matches there. But still, you know, they had to like bust in their crowd or like, you know, plant people into the crowd or whatever. So, I mean, it wasn't like those were
and
real
I
crowds.
Think,
well, tell me.
A lot of it was Dusty booking Heat. Dusty booked angles and Heat better than anybody. And when you book Heat in 1984 or 86 in high school gymnasium on TV taping, you're just going to get a very special vibe that you can't recreate. Like,
I agree with that.
And then the business died down from like 90 to, you know, 96. And then once that, I mean, it came back in 96 to like 2000, Heat was crazy. But like during the early part of the decade, it was considerably less exciting, in my opinion. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was also kind of like the low point of wrestling, right? I mean, historically, at least, that's been kind of like the nadir of that early 90s. You know, where just not a lot was going on in either company. Vince had the steroid trial. WCW was going through all kinds of changes, you know, hopping from one booker, owner, not owner, but, you know, fucking one guy in control to the next, you know. So let's rewind. Let's go back to 1989. So in 1989, Rick's a face, and then Scott comes to the NWA, and now it's on. The Steiners are a fucking tag team, and what are your thoughts when you first saw them team up?
I was not impressed with them when they first started teaming up because Scott Steiner looked like an asshole. He had yellow boots, no knee pads, and yellow trunks, and he didn't do anything that cool, and I'm a costume freak. I always hated any wrestler without knee pads. Ron Garvin, Greg Valentine, Kevin Von Erich, Mr. Magnificent Kevin Kelly looked like a $1 million, no knee pads, fuck him. If wrestlers didn't have knee pads, I automatically thought they looked like fucking assholes. So I just thought, whatever. And it was funny because a lot of the guys that didn't have knee pads never really made it to the top. So I think there's maybe something to this. But, Ron Garvin won the belt. Whatever. Now I'm looking like an idiot. But, yeah.
We already know the setup for that one, man. That was all a setup just so Rick could win it back. So I'll forgive you for that.
Yeah, yeah. Still, though, he did win the world title, so I'm wrong. But, like, you know, guys on knee pads always suck. So, like, the Steiners really didn't hit it huge for me until fall 1989. Now, but what I will say is during that summer, Rick and Scott Steiner had lots of really good brawls with Kevin Sullivan and Mike Rotunda. And I remember Scott Steiner had a match at Luda on TV, but he kind of lost almost clean. So, like, I don't know. Steiner, he did invent the Pudgyplex in those days, like April to like August of 89, the Pudgyplex to everybody else with brains that aren't like me and naming shit by my own brand. When 1989, Scott Steiner would give somebody a body slam, and he'd do a backflip by holding him in a body slam. And it was called the Blockbuster Suplex, but I called bullshit because me and my friends called it the Pudgyplex long before Scott Steiner even did the move. Because we had, like, those Remco dolls, and, like, we had the wrestling toys.
Yeah,
well, we'd have a guy do a body slam and then do a backflip while we had a guy in a body slam. And the Kurt Hennig doll, the AWA doll, had a real pudgy face, so we called it the Pudgy Flex. And, like, when he did this fucking move, me and my friend's jaws hit the fucking floor, because we're like, holy shit, Scott Steiner does the Pudgy Flex, which we thought was, like, a move that no one could even do. So it was, like, a real great moment in time when he did it. And to this fucking day, anytime I see anyone even remotely come close to doing that flip body slam thing, I lose my shit. Because, like, very few people have done it, possibly for good reason. Because Scott would always, like, land on his head trying to do it. Like, it's a very dangerous move to pull off. But they called it the Blockbuster Suplex, even though it was, like, a flip body slam. But he did it to Jim Garvin, Michael Hayes, Keith Steinborn, the Wimpy. I could name them on and on because I remember when he did his fucking move. But it was a really cool move, and it was even done when he had shitty yellow trunks and he teamed up with Rick during the summer of 89.
It's funny you mentioned that you had your wrestling dolls inventing moves that, you know, weren't executed yet, because I remember probably 1984, 85, probably around that, I don't know, whenever those big fucking LJN fucking WWF dolls came out, the big rubber ones, you know, that had only one pose. And at first, you know, I mean, like I said, man, we couldn't afford that shit, right? I mean, at least, you know, because I'm sure, like, if my mom, you know, she bought me G.I. Joes. That was my toy, right? I could get G.I. Joes. And so, but my cousin, you know, his fucking dad was rich, you know, or whatever. And so we'd always go to their nice little palace. And then I'd see all these wrestling dolls. I was like, wow, man, it's fucking wrestlers. But then when he tried to bend them, they didn't fucking bend. And I was pissed off. I was like, well, that sucks. You know, and then, like, if somebody was pointing at themselves, well, you couldn't do anything. And the most you could do maybe was a body slam, and, you know, another guy you just basically just had to just, like, have one lay down and just throw a splash on him. Well, so fuck it, you know, I start taking my G.I. Joes, and G.I. Joes have all kinds of flexibility, and they have all these points of what do you call it, swivel ability. I don't know what the fuck it's called, but you know what I mean. So their fucking arms and their wrists and everything else can twist around. So fucking I would invent wrestling moves with the G.I. Joes. You know, there's always like a I didn't have a fucking wrestling ring. I would just take a blanket, fold it up into a square, and that would be my fucking wrestling ring for fucking the G.I. Joes. And then you have them leaping off beds and doing, like, you know, fucking, you know, stage dives long before New Jack ever did it. You know, so I'm going to say that my G.I. Joes invented the fucking the stage dive. Well before anyone in ECW did, okay?
Yeah, I think wrestling definitely spread creativity with us youngsters. But what's the next topic we're getting into? It's like fall 89, is that where we're going?
Yeah, we're in 89, and the next big angle I remember was Rick Steiner's courtship of woman, okay? And actually,
okay,
her name wasn't woman yet. Oh, what did we forget?
They won the belt before that shit happened. They won the belt from the Freebirds. They won the belt from the Freebirds in, like, September 1989.
Okay.
And then
how was that feud?
It wasn't really a feud. They just won the belt from the Freebirds for some, you know, weird reason. Well, I know why they won the belt. And we go again into another really retarded Rob Naylor dialogue. They won the belts because they fucking switched types. They switched their goddamn outfits into, like, Mr. Perfect shit. But, like, the Mr. Perfect tights, which is, like, biker shorts and the fucking, what do you call that, like, the strap and shit. Like, really cool fucking tights. Like, neon yellow and fucking zebra
shit. Like a singlet. They wore a singlet.
Yeah, but, like, cool-looking Mr. Perfect singlet type shit. And, like, it was, like, badass. So the moment they came out with them outfits, I was like, fuck yes, this is the tag team of the 90s. And it just was I knew then, like, this is a whole new generation of badass wrestling. Because then as soon as they had that gear, they started inventing new shit, it was almost like. Like, as soon as they had that gear, Tilt the World Slam and all the other things that we're going to do later, and I'm like, fuck. But they beat the Freebirds, and then the whole Robin Green thing started. So it was like, but yeah, their gear switch was fucking pivotal. Don't let no one fucking fool you. Like, it's like when DX had the music, and it just changed overnight. Like, it went from these dudes to, holy shit, it's all about presentation. And that was around the time where they got Welcome to the Jungle with the music, and they fucking wore that gear, and it's like, okay,
So you think the push directly correlated with getting the new gear?
I guarantee you 100% it didn't, but I guarantee you 100% in my mind I'm going to say it did. If I was the booker, yes, that's exactly what happened, but it probably is not the case. But their gear was fucking badass. Like, it was a cool year.
Now, okay, so then they finally win the belts, and then Rick starts courting Robin Green, a.k.a. Woman, or she became Woman. And, you know, and it was kind of a feel-good story, right, that, you know, Rick Steiner finds a girl who's as stupid as he is, you know, and you always think, well, if Scott's the smart one, shouldn't he be able to pick up a chick, you know? I mean, isn't he the big bad booty daddy? You know, but no, it was Rick Steiner who gets the girlfriend, right? And then she fucking for those who haven't seen it, she ends up deceiving Rick. And why don't you fill the people in on that that whole feud there?
Well, Jim Ross takes Rick Steiner on a dream date with Robin Green, and Robin Green, stupid girl with pigtails and a button-up collared shirt and long pants, turns into this seductive sex goddess who opens the door revealing giant breasts and Mom's like, holy shit, you know, this is crazy. So they go ahead and they go on a little date, and then like there's a vignette that was done where Rick Steiner tripped on one of the Clash matches, and basically Scott blamed Robin Green for tripping Rick. Oh, and Missy Hyatt was with them, too.
So Missy Hyatt was in there, too. That's
Missy
right.
Missy Hyatt was
our good friend
Steiners
Missy Hyatt.
80s. Right before Robin Green even came in the picture, Missy Hyatt was with Rick and Scott Steiner, looking real good. I remember this vividly because I remember Jim Ross used the word bodacious, and I had never heard the term bodacious before in my life. He's like, Missy Hyatt looking bodacious. And I'm like, yeah, oh, that is, but I agree, you know, as like an 11-year-old kid. But regardless, yeah, Missy Hyatt was with them. And I remember Missy being like the good girl with them, and then Robin Green having like a harder edge, and then she tripped Scott, and she tripped Scott. So then, like, the whole thing was, well, Scott just tripped on the rope, and he looked at her, and he's like, yeah, well, I'll never trip again. And then they went in the limo, and Rick was supposed to be in the limo, but no, he wasn't. So he gets his ass handed to him, and they have him getting beat up on, like, gravel outside somewhere, and they throw him out of the limo. And then this guy, who they didn't show his face, the way it was shot was really cool. Like, the cameraman's like, oh, I'm going to run and get help. And he puts the camera down and runs away. And then this guy goes and starts kicking the shit out of Scott Steiner. And she's like, come on, Doom. And the guy's like, okay. And then the guy goes. And the only place this gets weird, and it's, you know, it's the way NWA and WCW always was, because things didn't make sense sometimes. Doom gets introduced, and they're black dudes. But, like, Doom in this video was, like, clearly a white guy. He had white arms. He was, like, the guy was kicking Rick, and you saw the boots, and you saw, like, white arms and hands. And I'm guaranteeing you it was probably Kevin Sullivan. But, like, maybe things changed. But Doom ended up being black people. It was Bruce Reed and Ron Simmons. But it wasn't whoever this was. But I vividly remember this. So then she was with Doom. And for whatever reason, I don't think Missy was with the Steiners anymore after that. I don't know. We have to ask Missy what happened there, but Steiners and Doom then was where things went.
Well, before we get to that feud, I just wanted to tell people that if you go to the Wrestling Observer website, Missy Hyatt just recently made a post, and when we had her on our show, we had sent her some questions to answer beforehand, and unfortunately, because of the dog sitter situation that she found herself in. She wasn't able to finish the show. But what she was able to do, and she was very kind of her, very thoughtful, was she answered all of the questions that we had sent to her. And she answered them honestly, and there's so much more insight that if you just listened to our show or if you just heard a talk before that you probably wouldn't have picked up on before, but there's so much insight into, like, a lot of the things that were going on in World Class at the time. So I strongly recommend that if you can, click on the Observer website and read Missy's thoughts on World Class and the questions that we had prepared for her on the show. Rob?
Ew, yes. Yeah, she definitely, she was awesome on those answers. It's unbelievable how much detail. Definitely thorough, to say the very least. And we'll hope to have her on about another subject sooner than later. But, okay, so the Doom Feud. What's next on your little list there, Will?
The Doom Feud, man. What were your personal thoughts on Doom?
I didn't like Doom. I definitely didn't like Doom. And not a racial thing. I'm just not a fan of Ron Simmons and Butch Reed under mask. Well, and, hey, man, Skip Young died, by the way. You got to break this up for a second. Remember Pete Brown Sugar Skip Young? He died, man.
Yes. Yeah, he was featured on the Mid-South DVD VR80 set.
Yeah, I love Skip Young. Skip Young was awesome.
Oh,
he was the original Pete Brown Sugar before Coco Beware. But, yeah, he died. Meltzer wrote a little bit about a paragraph and a half. But I was like,
rest in
Skip
peace,
Young.
Skip Young, man. Shit.
Yes, that's an African-American wrestler who I thoroughly enjoyed. Make me not racist. But, yeah, I didn't really like Doom that much. Was not a fan of those guys. Even when they took the masks off, I thought they were fucking wildly. Butch Reed, in my opinion, is the most wildly overrated guy ever, but whatever.
We're going to have to agree. Hold on.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. You might think he's wildly overrated. I think that he should have become so much more than he did because I thought he was an awesome wrestler. I thought Mid-South, he ripped it up. I thought when he was fighting Jerry Blackwell, I think in Central States, he was tearing it up. I think it was St. Louis. In Florida as he wasn't Butch Reed. What was his first name? He didn't go to Butch Reed. It was Bruce Reed, I think. He had some good angles and a couple of good matches in Florida that I have on tape. And Butch Reed is an awesome wrestler. And I thought Doom just kind of reinvigorated his career. I thought that these two guys were big and mean and killers. And, you know, I'm kind of the opposite, man. I don't want to say it's racist, but I was always, like, kind of intrigued by, like, either black wrestlers or Mexican wrestlers. Like, the only T-shirt I ever had as a kid was an Ariba Santana shirt and shit. Fucking had, like, a sun and a palm tree in the background. You know, it was the gayest shirt ever. But it was fucking Tito Santana's T-shirt, and I was sporting it, all right? And then fucking I had the Ricky Steamboat poster because, you know, he fucking knew martial arts, and he was mysterious and fucking foreign. You know, so I always kind of had an affinity for, like, your black wrestlers, your Asian wrestlers, you know, Great Muta, fucking Coco Beware, you know, I was doing the bird, fucking my fat ass was fucking flopping around like a jellyfish trying to do the bird, you know, so whatever, man. Fucking Doom rocks, man, and fucking, you know, with the masks on, they look fucking evil, and, you know, I didn't fucking have any, you know, and this is how I'm fucking stupid I am, and I had no idea who they were until someone pointed it out to me, and I was like, I guess you're right.
I thought, you know what, me too. I thought it was Lethal Larry Cameron and Ron Simmons. And I thought Larry Cameron was the shitty one of the two. But I always knew Ron Simmons was, because I liked him more than the other one. But then when it was Butch Reed, I'm like, oh, okay. I should have realized when they were the Ebony Experience in WCW during summer of 89, you know, 3 months earlier. But, yeah, that was pretty dumb of us. But, I didn't really like that feud much. But I do remember this, that the Clash of the Champions – the immortal line of one of doom is Frankenstein was uttered by Jim Ross. Now, the story on this is
repeat that line.
One of doom is Frankenstein. What happened was the Road Warriors, the Skyscrapers, Doom, and the Steiners all had this crazy brawl on the Clash, the I Quit Clash with Flair and Funk. And Ross and Soli were so good on commentary that show. But, like, I only got to see the highlights. I mean, you get CBS and Shimokin. So I'm watching this match. Crazy brawl. And Scott Steiner does this move where he jumps up with his legs and throws the guy over with his legs, which did not have a name yet. But Jim Ross goes, "What a Doom! What a Doom is Frankenstein!" And I'm like, "What?" And I hadn't seen Doom because we didn't get the pay-per-view either in Shimogen. So, like, I didn't know if Doom had names or not, so I just assumed one of Doom's name was Frankenstein. So I'm like, "What a Doom is Frankenstein? What does that mean?" And, like, it was all wild and chaotic, and what's going on? So, like, for at least a month, I kept thinking, "One of Doom is Frankenstein," and I was like, "Well, what is that? What's the other guy's name? Wolfman?" Like, I didn't know.
The other one
was
the Mummy or the Vampire?
When I finally figured out that the move was called the Frankensteiner, and I'm like, "Oh, okay." And, like, all the dots connected for me then, but I was like, "What the fuck does that mean? One of Doom is Frankenstein? Jim Ross, you're so smart. I don't understand what you're saying." So, yeah. It was weird. Like, when you first said lateral press was always one that I was like, "What is that? What does that mean?" You know, like, I never knew what that was. And, like, I look like he's going to pin for, you know, I think he's going for a pin. What's he saying? Lateral press, you know? And, whatever. But I just continue in ways that I should have been in a special ed class, but we'll continue. We'll take that subject on a different show.
Now, Rob. And we did this with Terry Gordy, and we'll probably do it with every single wrestler we ever talk about on these shows. But, you know, now that the Steiners have come in full effect, one of the things that you just brought up was that, you know, one of Doom got Frankensteined, right? Which, you know, Jim Ross would have said it right. He would have said Frankensteinered, right? And then you would have never had that confusion going on in your head. But one of the things Steiners are really known for is all of their innovative moves. So why don't you talk about your favorite Steiner moves, and then I'll chime in with my favorite.
Dude, it was fucking like a new move every week. Tilt-A-Whirl Slam, Scott Steiner debuted sometime in 1990. Overhead belly-to-belly suplex, never seen one until Ricker Scott did it. Angle Slam, Scott Steiner started doing it back in the early 90s. Pudgyplex, a.k.a. Blockbuster Suplex. the electric chair fucking bulldog, craziest shit ever when I first saw it. The top rope goddamn DDT out of the electric chair, absolutely crazy, never saw it before. Steiner's Rick Steiner's Steiner line, you know, I was the old school one, but still, that has to take effect. I know I'm might be Steiner square driver. Rick Steiner, or Scott Steiner, picks the guy up in a suplex and drops him into a fucking seated tombstone, which is like a late one they did.
Are you sure it's the square driver, not the screwdriver? I'm pretty sure it's the screwdriver.
In Japan, they call it Steiner square driver, but Steiner screwdriver, I've heard it over here. Scott Steiner was the first person I ever saw do a tiger driver on a wimpy guy in like 1991 or 90, and I was like, what the fuck? How is that possible? It was like when I saw him the Pudgy Plex. I was like, what? But I didn't come up with that one. What else did they do? They just did everything.
The release,
like,
German?
The first release German,
I remember.
They did so many unique, awesome things. And anybody that fucking says, I didn't like the Steiners, they didn't have psychology, fuck off with that shit. Nobody gave a fuck about psychology when you're watching the goddamn Steiners. No one likes moves. Everyone pretends they don't like moves. Moves make wrestling go round. Like, granted, psychology and all that other bullshit's good, too. But, dude, when you're a kid, you're watching it for athleticism, you're watching it for cool moves, and you're watching it for story. But, like, to me, like, the first time I saw somebody do a cool move, it was always, like, such an awesome moment. So, like, yeah, Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner was goddamn filled with cool moves, and they just kept them coming. Like, and it was a joy to watch their wimpy matches. That's another thing. Maybe some people are younger and they don't remember wimpy matches. But wimpy matches were still fucking boring. Guy come in, kick, punch, body slam, clothesline, kick, punch. But, like, Scott and Rick Steiner would devise new and disgusting ways to fucking injure these goddamn wimpies. To the point that I do hear stories that when wimpies would see the Steiners were on the fucking the booking sheet to wrestle them that day at TV, they'd be fucking freaking out. It's like, oh, shit, we got to wrestle now, you know. Who the hell knows what we got to take? But, yeah, Rick and Scott Steiner still moved. M-O-O-B-S, moves. The moves that the Steiners came up with were fucking sick. And I still love them to this fucking day. Probably in my top five tag teams of all time because they're fun as shit to watch.
That's awesome. So So that they had an unseated Hanson and Gordy off your top spot there, huh? Or Doc and Gordy?
Hanson and Gordy are near the top. They're the top two, probably. Steiner's are probably number one, I'll be honest. I'd have to really collect my thoughts. Freebirds are like top five, too.
That's good. Now let me ask you this. Now, what about your reaction? Because we talked about like teams in the 80s who are all roided up with the face paint like the Road Warriors. Well, at Starcade, the fucking Steiner brothers beat the Road Warriors. How did you react to that?
I didn't get to see that live, but when I read about it in the magazines, I couldn't fucking believe it. The Road Warriors did not lose, so that was fucking shocking to see. And that was kind of cool because you kind of saw the passing of the torch there, as quiet as it was, because I don't really remember that. They didn't really make that big a deal out of it on the TV shows, but the Steiners did indeed beat the Road Warriors, and they needed to. They should have. I love the Road Warriors, too. But Steiner Brothers had so much more to offer than the Road Warriors, in my opinion. So.
Well, I'm not even going to argue that. You know, like I said, when I was 10, I loved the Road Warriors. When I was 15, not so much. You know, just one of those things where it seems like their time had passed. And so, you know,
I still like them, but I like the Steiners more.
Well, I like them now looking back. You know, 20 years later, I can appreciate them more than I could when I was, you know, looking for something new in wrestling, you know. And this brings us to 1990, and we sing the praises of the Steiners, but the Steiners really didn't have a really eventful 1990 early on. Why don't you run us through their awesome feuds leading up to the highlight of their year, which was the Nasty Boys feud. Why don't you tell us what was going on?
Yeah, well, the highlight, they had that big feud with Ole and Arn Anderson, which I couldn't think of two worse wrestlers to wrestle the Steiners. I mean, Arn kind of worked well with Rick, but, like, Arn wasn't going to take a lot of their cool shit, and Ole wasn't going to take any of their fucking cool shit. So, like, I know a lot of people, they speak highly of that match at Wrestle War 90. Not this guy. Hated it. what else happened? Then they fucking, Ole got hurt, or Arn got hurt, or some shit, so Ole came in with the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, too. And I had no idea it was the Destruction Crew at the time, even though I should have known better. It was one of those doom things where this time with white people under masks and you're like, hey, same tights, except they're blue and not yellow or orange. It's like, all right, who are those guys? Fuck that, dude. It's weird because I thought the Beverly Brothers and the Steiners and WWF had some of the most awesome matches, but the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, too, sucks. There's no heat behind them whatsoever. Then what happened? 1990.
They did the Midnight Express. They had a couple matches with them, which I thought they could have gotten more traction out of that.
Yeah, didn't care for the Midnight Express feud with the Steiners. I like the Midnight Express against 95% of any tag team on the planet, not the Steiners. I just thought even Bobby Eaton, I thought, didn't look good in that. I don't know. It was just weird. I didn't like that either. The big fucking deal was the Nasties. The Nasties showed up. There was a killer angle tape in Chicago before Halloween Havoc where Brian Knobs and Sags fucking smacked one of the guys in the head with the title belt and power slammed the other brother through a fucking wooden table, which I think was one of the first table breakings pre-ECW in at least NWA, you know what I mean? So that was really awesome. Then they had the Halloween Havoc match, one of my fucking A favorite matches of all time, probably top 10 for me. And the more often I say this, you'll realize there's like 100 things in my top 10, but like this match is fucking amazing. Like Rick and Scott against the Nasties, that was the debut of the top rope bulldog on the guy's shoulders for one thing. There was a belly to back, or overhead belly to belly off the second rope. Stuffed pile driver from the Nasties. The Nasties were such good fucking brawlers. Rick Steiner could take a punch, so like the brawling is very believable. There was juice, there was a chair shot, probably to the head, you know. It was awesome. Just lots of good shit happening. Ending all of it climaxing with fucking Brian Knobs almost committing suicide, taking a Frankensteiner on his fucking head. But yeah, man, that match was fucking awesome. Like, so fucking awesome. Everyone needs to see it. That whole Chicago Halloween Havoc 90, for people that have not seen it, What a hot-ass crowd. Like, those people were fucking insane. We talked earlier how the crowd died down. This might have been one of the very last rabid, crazy, losing their shit crowds I've ever seen.
Now, did the Nasties immediately go to the WWF? Is that why that feud just kind of disappeared? Or?
Yeah, they went to the WWF, and Rick and Scott then had to wrestle the Master Blaster, Blade and Steel. And Blade and Steel kind of sucked, and they didn't really – I was always pissed because I thought Blade and Steel were like the new Road Warriors because, of course, they were on steroids and had paint. So I was like, oh, or not paint, but sludge on their face, whatever it was. But they actually were not ready for that role. And one of the – I think Blade ended up leaving. Or one of the
who
matches
– Blade and Steel?
Steel was Kevin Nash, and Blade was the Blade Hunter, who was also the dog, who was also – oh, what's the guy's legitimate name?
Al Green?
Al Green, thank you. He was Al Green. And he was also in the Wrecking Crew with Animal's brother, the Terminator. But that was a couple of years later.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Al Green.
That's one of the worst wrestlers ever.
I loved him. But, yeah, the Al Green and Diesel were not a good competition for the Steiners. And there was actually another Master Blaster before Al Green who only lasted 2 weeks in the wrestling business, Corey Pendarvis. And there's some useless knowledge for everyone. But, yeah, so now he was best known, though, for missing a headbutt by, like, a half a foot on a live Clash of Champions. It's pretty awesome. But, so Blade and Steel went away, and then we go into, what was it, 1991, and that was when shit really picked up.
Right, and that's when, at least my, what came first, man, the Japanese tours or the War Games match?
I'm going to guess that the Japanese thing happened in January 91 and was filmed and taped and shown in America in March of 91. So I'm going to say the match of Hase and Sasaki happened in January 91, and that match is another match that's on my list of best matches fucking ever. That's the match where Rick Steiner took one of the craziest clothesline bumps of all time against Kensuke Sasaki. He's a badass motherfucker himself. Yeah,
what happened
here, man?
What do you mean?
Saki hit Rick Steiner with a clothesline, but it was one of those really cool follow-through discus lariats, and Rick Steiner took his patented land head-over-heels and land-on-my-head bump. It's really cool. And,
wow.
Jim Ross was like, they should call it the Sasaki line. I'm like, oh, shit, that guy's badass. So, like, I really like that match. They show clips on free TV. I haven't seen the match until more recently, but the clips were all I needed to know that it was a badass match. It was cool spots and moves.
I'll have to hunt that down and send it to you.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really, really good. It's on Naylor Comp 1, homie, or maybe 2. But it's a really good-ass match. And then after that, they had the War Games, which was them, Sting, and there was a fourth guy against Zbysko, Flair, Sid, and...
The Pillman. Well, that was the Pillman
War Game. Ryan Pillman. Yeah, Brian Pillman was in it, and Barry Windham was in it. It was fucking amazing. 5-star match, 4 3/4, whatever you want to call it. Just a fucking great match, with my favorite Steiner moment being Rick Steiner and Sid Vicious having at least a 1-minute conversation in the corner before a spot that got caught completely on camera. Awesome.
Did
it was
they really?
The moment. It was the moment I knew wrestling was fake. It's literally one of those moments in time you never forget because it's like, fuck. Rick Steiner is in the corner and Sid's gone. He's like, hey, I gotcha. And he's like, yeah, okay. He's like, oh, is he there? Is he there? And we're like, yeah. And then like he goes to whip him and then Rick reverses it and Scott clotheslines Sid. And I was like, fuck. And I just remember being completely saddened by knowing that. I'm like, God damn it, they're all friends. Yeah. But
funny,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's funny you should mention, like, the moment you realize wrestling is fake. And I think I realized it a lot sooner than that, you know, because I always had my mother screaming in my... Well, I always had my mother screaming in my ear, that shit's fake. That shit's fake. Fuck you, Mom. It's not fake. These guys are athletes. They're warriors, you know. But no, I always knew in my heart it was fake, but I didn't want to believe it. But then, somebody
was... That's what I'm saying. We all knew it was fake, Will, but, like, when you get something
I think what I knew was when, like, somebody would, the Rock and Roll Express would, do a double drop kick, and neither foot or none of the 4 feet would, touch the guy, or they would, graze the arm, it would just be, one of those bad double-team drop kicks, Just for whatever reason, it wasn't one of their killer full body contact double kicks. And then the guy would sell it like death, and they'd pin him anyway. It's like, dude, you didn't even fucking touch him.
I make up excuses. Lord. Even when, Duggan and the Sheik got caught with marijuana in 1987, I was like, oh, I'm traveling together. I'm like, Duggan turned on our country. Like, I had completely...
I thought the opposite, because I thought, well, if fucking Nikita Koloff could fucking team with Dusty Rhodes, why can't the Iron Sheik see the error of his ways?
Yeah. You would try to explain Randy Sink to yourself until you saw Sid talking to Rick Stein in the corner of fucking War Games
I was actually talking to a buddy of mine. He said the first time he realized wrestling was fake was, because we live here in Texas, the Chris Adams Jimmy Garvin feud was going on strong, right? And mm-hmm. his stepdad had bought him tickets to go see World Class Wrestling here in town. And he was so excited that, his mom let him stay up late to watch it, that night or that weekend. And the main event was Chris Adams versus Jimmy Garvin. And the finish was a sunset flip roll up from the apron, or it was a roll up from behind after getting sprayed in the eyes by his fucking valet. Which one was it at the time? Was it Sunshine or Precious? One of the two. I don't fucking remember which one it was. It escapes my memory. And he says that when he went to the show that weekend, he thought that it was going to be a rematch of what he just saw on TV. Chris Adams is going to get his revenge. But that they did the exact same match that showed up on TV. The exact same beginning, the exact same finish. And he said, right then and there, he's like, wow, this is like going to the Ice Capades or the circus. You know what you're going to get every time.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It really fucked him up.
God damn it.
But that War Games is a great match. Let's get back on the Steiners. I'm sorry. Now I'm depressed, man. Fuck wrestling. It's all fake, man. Fuck that fake shit. But I think, the War Games was a great match. I don't even remember Steiner and Sid talking to each other. I'm surprised you caught that,
I think everyone does, but it's okay. You can rewatch it and see. But
I guess I'll have to rewatch it.
Yeah, it was awful.
It's not something I really focus on. One of the things, I focus on now, and it's kind of ruined it for me, is anytime there's blood in the match, I know when the guy's bleeding. When he has his hand and he's moving his forehead around, he's cutting himself. It's just one of those things that ruins it for me now. I always catch when the fucking guy is bleeding.
Be lucky that there's barely any blood in wrestling anymore now anyway, so not to worry about it.
Oh, yeah, because these guys today would not be able to hide it as well,
Who did they wrestle after this?
We have on here Luger and Sting as the feud after.
Yeah, the big match with Luger and Ling at the fucking Super Bowl. That was a fucking... it's like broken records, but another one of the greatest matches ever. Steiner's Nasties, Steiner's Hase Sasaki, Steiner's Luger and Ling at the fucking Super Bowl was fucking amazing. You want to talk about a fucking match. I remember I posted about that a couple years ago on Death Valley, and I was like, fuck yeah, everyone watch this match again, it's amazing, Pro Wrestling Illustrated match of the year. And some dickwad comes up saying, oh, well, the psychology and control segments and the fucking, I didn't put the rest of the narrative of that match. Shut the fuck up. If I was looking to watch a wrestling match thinking of long-term narratives and control segments, I'd fucking shoot myself in the head. Jesus fucking Christ. It's professional wrestling. It's supposed to be dudes beating the shit out of other dudes and dropping them on their heads. Fucking loved it. That match was badass. Even goddamn Loser stepped the fuck up. Clotheslining motherfuckers left and right. Nikita smacked him the fucking head of the chain. No, he smacked Sting with the fucking chain. Sting took a tire driver. Sting did a goddamn dive. It was nuts, man. Reverse tombstones out the ass. Like, dude, that match fucking rules. Will, what do you think of that match? Please tell me you're not one of those guys talking about
men. No, man. I didn't watch it live, but I think by 1991, my wrestling fandom had faded. I wasn't watching wrestling at the time. So I watched a lot of this stuff from 91, 92, 93. I watched a lot of this stuff after, you know. But when I watched it, you know, probably around 2000, 2001 is when I picked it up off of some tape trader or something, you know, probably third generation video quality, shitty quality. I remember really liking the match. You know, I didn't think it was like five-star classic or whatever you want to call it, but I really remember liking the match and thinking, wow, that for two babyface teams to kind of generate that kind of excitement, you know, hey, they're doing something right, you know. And then the Nikita thing just kind of threw me off. It's like, what the fuck is Nikita doing there? You know, I didn't have any idea.
I liked it. I liked it. I didn't want one of those good guy teams to be the other guy, good guy team clean. And when Nikita smacks Sting in the face with a chain, I was like, fuck yeah. That was when Nikita was all back jacked up. He brought the Russian chain out, and then that set him and Sting up for the whole summer of their feud. So I was pumped, man. And, like, Steiner's like, fuck, I guess we won, but we didn't want to win this way. And then what the fuck did the Steiner – oh, then the Steiners fucking were ruined. Scott hurt his arm, but they had a match with Chono and Hase, I think, on a Clash. And that was when Scott fucked his bicep up or tore his bicep for the first time of – well, we'll just say a couple. And that took him out for the entire summer, and we didn't get our Steiners Hardliners Collection Agency feud, which they built up. And they actually said the Hardliners ended up taking out Scott's arm, leaving Rick the singles competition for like fucking 7 months. But I really like the idea of the Hardliners against them, even though I don't think Dickie Murdoch or Slater would have taken many of the cool moves. That was one of the weird things where I just think that would have worked. I'm not really sure why. I think Dick Murdoch against Rick Steiner.
Especially when you just said that Ole and Arn weren't the type of guys to have a feud with them. But you think Murdoch and Slater are?
That's what I'm just saying. I think they are. Like, I don't understand why, but I think it would have worked. Because I think Slater would have bumped, and I think Murdoch throwing punches is better than anything Ole and Arn could ever fucking do. So I would say, yeah, I would have appreciated that. And
yeah,
seeing
see,
Dick
I don't
Slater,
remember
Dick
any
Murdoch
of this, man.
If Dick Murdoch took a Frankensteiner, I think the world would have exploded, but we'll never know what would have happened.
Yeah, man, rest in peace,
by
Dick
the
Murdoch,
time Scott
man.
Was healed, it was all over with. So.
Yeah, well, then Rick is in singles, but then Scott heals up, and then, you know, they wrestle Sting and Muta on a dome show in Japan. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Before I get to that, I really liked Rick Steiner's single run. I thought Rick Steiner against Lex Luger at Clash something-something toward the end of 1991 was fucking amazing. It was Luger and Sting against Rude and Luger against Steiner on the same Clash. Very good Clash. Find it if you don't know what one it is. But, but after that, it was a dome show, and it's a match I've never even seen the full match of. But the Steiners against Sting and Muta, and it's Great Muta in full Great Muta outfit. And Sting takes Muta and press slams him on top of Rick. He takes a back bump over the top rope with Muta. That was the clip they showed on NWA TV at the time. And it's still the clip that haunts me and will make me one day seek that fucking whole match out to watch. Because I'm sure it was good. I mean, come on.
No, I'm with you. Then after that, you know, the Dangerous Alliance was coming on strong. And so they feuded with the Dangerous Alliance and various incantations. I know you're not big on the Dangerous Alliance. I remember you said on a previous show that we had with Steve Carino that you thought the Dangerous Alliance is kind of a boring stable. So, I don't know. What were your reactions to, like, the Steiners fighting the Dangerous Alliance?
I like the Dangerous Alliance, but I usually like anything Paulie Dangerously has anything to do with. But I think they're overrated. Although, you know what? Maybe by this time I like them more than the Horsemen. But I don't know. It's weird. I'm funny with clicks like that. But I like Dangerously. I thought Rick Rude was the man. I think Steve Austin was great in it. Bobby Eaton,
you're
I thought, was on the tail end.
You're a fucking serious man, Rob Naylor.
Yeah, I am. I think Bobby Eaton was on the tail end of his good run. Arn is Arn, and Zbysko I'm not against. I think Zbysko's an awesome human being, so I can't really speak too ill of him. But I thought they had a killer War Games. The Steiners weren't even in, but fuck it, I'll say that. And Bobby Eaton and Arn against the Steiners never really clicked with me either, but they did have that one finish where Bobby was on... Let's have this fucking go. No, Arn picked up Rick Steiner in an electric chair, like Legion of Doom thing, and Bobby went for a body press on Rick, and Rick turned it into a fucking belly-to-belly off Arn's shoulders. You can't really go wrong with that. Well, you probably easily could go wrong with that, but I think they did, actually, but I think that's a really cool idea. So even
now,
the match sucked, hooray for the dangerous finish. That was good.
Okay. Well, what about the Wrestle War match against Tatsumi Fujinami and Iizuka, or I don't know how to fucking pronounce his name. I'm not very good with Japanese names.
Iizuka, would you believe I've never seen that whole match either? All I know is Iizuka got a holy fucking defeat beaten out of him. Yeah, send me that show, Will. But because that show actually I think got Scotty the Body against Brian Pillman on it, too, which I know Raven says it was a fucking amazing match. So that's probably a pretty strong show. I've never seen the whole show. I just know that Iizuka got the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, it was a war, man. It was a nasty, fucking brutal beatdown. And that was a match that, you know, I actually saw that match around the same time I saw the Luger Sting match. And I remember watching the Japanese match saying, holy shit. You know, I mean, you know wrestling's fake. You know that these guys are cooperating. But you watch that match and think, man, these guys are not cooperating. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I didn't know about UWFI or UWF or Battle Arts or any of this other crap, you know, PWFG. So to me, I just watched that match and, fuck, dude, I don't even think I knew about New Japan at the time. You know, I just was kind of in my wrestling box, you know, here in the United States. Right? I didn't know about Lucha Libre. I didn't know about any of that shit. So when you see this, you're like, wait a minute, something's not right here. Why are they really beating the shit out of each other, you know? Why are these, you know? And I was like, well, maybe they don't understand each other because, you know, and then granted, you know, I'm fucking 18 at the time, so 19, 20, you know, in my 20s when I'm watching this thing. Yeah, I think I was 18 when it was released, 17 or 18 when it was released, but in my 20s when I'm watching the match. And I couldn't understand why they weren't cooperating with each other. Like, well, that's not the way wrestling is. They're supposed to cooperate. And it wasn't them cooperating. It was them surviving a fucking match. Yeah. What's going on, Rob? You there?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had a phone difficulty for a second.
Wouldn't be a show of ours if we didn't have some kind of technical difficulty. So, you know, it's all good, man. Now we talked about this last week. But after the kind of after that went on, we had our feud with the Doc and Gordy when Doc and Gordy came back. So, you know, I don't really want to spend a lot of time on that particular feud because we talked about it in depth last week. But for those who didn't listen to the Gordy show, man, what do they need to know about your thoughts on that feud?
It was like the greatest shit ever. Life-changing moment at the Clash 19 when Bill Watts said, let's hook him up. The match I saw there was delivered. They had a match at Beach Blast I should rewatch a couple times. They had a match at the Omni that looked to be the best one ever that I've seen highlights of, but I don't know if the whole match exists anywhere. I got to get my friends in the WWF library to look for that one. But
nice.
You know, fuck, I mean, you can't go wrong with those two teams, you know. I can't speak ill of it, but like I said, like you said, we discussed it at length last week, so if people want to hear about that, check that one
out. That's right, click that. I think that would be on part two of the Terry Gordy show last week. You know, after our technical difficulties, you'll have to download part two of our show to hear Rob's thoughts on that. Now, at this time, Rick gets hurt. Okay, right after this happens. And Scott goes single. Now, you told me, man, I had to bring up Scott and Bill Watts' relationship. You know, and in Scott's shoot interview, he just said that Bill Watts was like his father, you know, and, you know, that, you know, a big bully. And I know you have some opinions on their relationship.
Yeah, well, not really opinions. I just remember Scott. I remember Rick got hurt, and I was like, well, fuck it, Scott's going to be the new world heavyweight champion, because I fucking thought Scott was the shit. and Scott won the TV belt. I got my Pro Wrestling Illustrated Weekly in the mail, and it told me that Scott won the TV belt a week ago from Ricky Steamboat. And I was like, what? He beat Ricky Steamboat? And it said Scott turned kind of heel in the match on Ricky Steamboat. I'm like, what? And then what they didn't have the next week was, it just was like Steiner's leave NWA. But what happened was, I guess, Scott Steiner and Bill Watts got in kind of a scuffle in the back because Bill Watts wanted Scott to turn heel and then fight with Rick when Rick came back. And Scott Steiner said, you can stick that idea up your fucking ass, and just fucking left because that's what Scott Steiner does. So that was the end of my Steiners in the NWA WCW, and that led to the Steiners going to WWF.
Okay. Well, now, Rob, is your opinion that what the Booker wants is what should happen, and he's always right, or do you think that wrestlers should stick up for themselves when it's their careers on the line? Where do you stand on that?
I think Scott should have stuck around and dropped the belt and wrestled Rick Steiner and then left. But that's just me.
Okay, so you usually think that if you're a wrestler, you're the employee,
unless
you do what your
very, very unless it's very, very unreasonable. And some people would say asking someone to fight their brother is, but I don't know. I think he should have just stuck around. But whatever.
Okay.
Apparently there was
a ton
of money. They got their pay cut big time. So I think there were other factors involved anyway.
Yeah, I know Bill Watts was really proud about cutting the wrestler's payroll, you know.
Yeah, which isn't a popular decision at all, and maybe that's more fair for Scott to tell him to go fuck off, but, you know, whatever. I just think I would have liked to see heel Scott Steiner, and I definitely would have liked to see Scott against Rick, but that's just the wrestling fan in me being selfish.
Yeah, what kind of shitty feud did that turn out to be, you know, 5 years later, huh? 6 years later. So, but, you know, now they go to the WWF, and what was your take on their entire WWF run?
I'd say overall disappointing, but not as disappointing as one would think. I thought they got a lot of really, really good matches in while they were there. I really liked their fucking opening feud with the Beverly Brothers. I thought their Wimpy matches were fucking awesome. Like, I would do it. I would fucking pay good money, a.k.a. $10, for a really good comp of all the Steiners. All the Steiners WWF Wimpy matches all on a DVD would be dope. But,
all of $10.
$10. But yes, that was cool. They had some good head-shrinker matches. I thought that they had the Owen Brett match, which we will discuss maybe a little bit at length. You know, they had a good run. They never really had a good Nasties match, but they did some good stuff there. The Quebecers, Jean-Pierre Lafitte was put on this earth to wrestle Rick and Scott Steiner, since they're three of the more reckless human beings ever on the planet. So yeah, they did a lot of good stuff. I can't really say it was a flop by any means, but I thought they could have been used better. That's about all I can say.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of my feeling is you have this big tag team who's leaving the competition, right? And they come into your territory, and I just don't see why they weren't pushed to the moon, you know. And do you think that's just mainly because of Vince McMahon's how would you phrase it? Just his apathy towards tag teams, or, you know, you don't think he realized what he had there?
I don't think the apathy with Vince came until, like, 95. Maybe it developed during this time, but I don't know. I think ultimately it wasn't his creation, so he wasn't going to push it. It happened with the Road Warriors to a degree, too. So.
Now, you brought up the match between the Steiners and the Hart brothers, Owen and Brett. What are your impressions of that match?
That was one of my favorite Steiner matches. I thought, you talk about two teams that perfectly complemented each other. Right there they are. I mean, Owen Hart in particular against both Rick and Scott, money. And Brett had a really, really inspired showing in that tag, too. Lots of really good wrestling and counter-wrestling, amateur style at the start of that match. It flowed into them mixing it up and throwing some punches. And it ended up with them throwing everything in the book at each other, and it didn't have a finish, which I actually, again, do not mind with the right teams. It's basically the Luger-Sting match of the Steiners WWF run.
Right, and what I liked about that finish, where it didn't have a finish, is that they teased that they still wanted to fight each other. you know, you have the WWF agents running out, fucking, who's the bald-headed French motherfucker?
Ray Goulet.
Ray Goulet, yeah.
Official.
Fucking, they had him running out. They had fucking, the fucking Indian guy. They were all there.
Oh,
they were trying
God.
To...
CJ Strong, though.
Yeah,
Indian
man,
guy.
Fuck. Come on, man. I'm fucking, you know, it's late here, man. It's fucking, this is for people didn't know, man. It finally decided to get down in the 30s this week, and it happened to be the week that my heater in my house broke. So, you know, I'm a little discombobulated here, man. So forgive me if I forget some of these names as I'm shaking in my fucking boots, all right?
I'm just going to refer to Jay Strongbow now as the fucking Indian. Thank you for that. You're giving me a new idea.
I don't think we're ever going to do a Chief J. Strongbow show, though. But
fuck
you know,
no,
I really,
he's
but
terrible.
I don't think I'd have fucking five words to say about him. Well, maybe I just talk about him running in and helping trying to break up the fucking Steiner Smith. I don't even know if he was fucking there. I just think he was one of them. I like to think he was, man. I don't fucking know. I do remember that the other guy, Goulet, was there, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Can't forget that. But anyway, I really like the way that ended where, you know, the fucking agents had to break them up. And then finally, when cooler heads prevail, they fucking shake and hug each other and walk out victorious after, you know, entertaining the fans. So thumbs up to them for that. But what did you think? Now, I know you mentioned Lafitte being bred to fucking feud with the Stars. What did you think about that feud with the Quebecers?
I thought it should have lasted longer, and it never really reached any potential that it could have. The one
right.
thing that we did forget that I will put over while we're still doing the show.
What's
and we're
that?
Going long here. But the match with the Heavenly Bodies was fucking badass. Like, that match with the Heavenly Bodies and the Steiners at SummerSlam, I think it was 93, is probably one of my top five Steiner tag team matches. Very, very good match. And it showed the Steiners with the right Southern style team to totally blend it. Like, their match with the Heavenly Bodies fucking shits all over the Midnight Express match. That's why I'm one of the few fucking humans on the planet to tell people that I liked Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard better than either incarnation of the Heavenly Body. I know I might be alone in that. Or the Midnight Express, I should say. I thought that
yeah,
Del Rey
you're probably
and
the only one there.
Heavenly Body, they were fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, no, I really like the Heavenly Bodies. It's actually a comp that I've been entertaining the thought of actually putting together. It's just a Heavenly Bodies comp, you know. But I'm working on an SMW project, so it feels like it'd be double-dipping if I just did Heavenly Bodies, you know, and then released an SMW comp right after, you know. I'm a capitalist, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not going to try and steal your money that way. But either way, whatever. But then after that, man, I think after they left the WWF, I think really as a team, the highlight after that would probably be their New Japan matches, right? I mean, did you think that they had already run the course? What?
No, every year they'd have a match with Muto and Hase, and every year that would be one of my favorite matches of the year. Muto, Hase, and the Steiners had a very good rapport with each other, I thought. Like, I thought they were so good at eating all the Steiner suplexes and their offense. And I actually think Muto, Hase had some better matches than even the Kensuke, Hase match from 91 that everyone praised. But it just got to be a lot of the same stuff, you know what I mean? But, you know, always
yeah.
awesome. Like, if that's another comp I'd pay a lofty $10 for, to see the Steiners against Muto, Hase every match all in one comp. That would be badass. But, yeah, I always enjoyed the Steiners in the Dome. And they wrestled Hawk, and they wrestled Power Warrior and Hawk. Kensuke and Hawk against the Steiners is good stuff. They wrestled on a couple of those Pyongyang, North Korea shows. They wrestled with Scott Norton against Steiner or against the Road Warriors and Power Warrior. They did really well in Japan. I always liked their stuff there. I thought their ECW run was really good. I remember them and Eddie against Dean Malenko, Scorpio, and Cactus Jack, and that's a really good match. They would be around here and there and here and there, but then they basically came back into prominence in 96 with WCW.
Now, did they ever wrestle SMW, or was that a territory that they left?
No, they never wrestled for Smokey. They were supposed to. They were supposed to wrestle the Headbangers on the Super Bowl of Wrestling show in 95. But some shit went down, and they ended up not doing that. So.
I wonder why that is. You know the story of why they didn't do it?
Yeah, Jim booked them through Rick, and then Rick told Jim that they wanted $1,000 a piece, and Jim was like, well, I don't have $1,000 to give you both. And then he's like, well, Paulie does. And then Jim's like, well, we're in the business of trying to make money in wrestling. And then basically Rick steeped off to Jim that Scott had become a multimillionaire through some investments, and he didn't need to work, and he could just, like, chill out and only work when he wanted to. So then that led Cornette to say, I didn't know we were dealing with J.D. fucking Clampett. And that was that. There's your story. And thus, the Steiners never wrestled for Smoky Mountain. Actually, they might have wrestled for Smoky Mountain. They actually did, now that you mentioned that. They wrestled for Smoky Mountain in, like, 93 and 94, I think. Like, just a couple matches in Tennessee, I think. And that's what led Cornette to book them again a couple years later, and their price went up exponentially for whatever reason. I think that's the way it went.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, man, my memory's a little foggy when it comes to that period.
Yeah, you know what happened? Will, I think it was when they wrestled the Bodies in 93 in the WWF. I think they also did a Smoky match, too. It was one of those talent trade deals. That makes sense to me right
now. Yeah, I have to see if there's any footage of that running around there. It's something I have to investigate. But let's get back to 1996 WCW. Now, this is like when they came back. They wrestled the Road Warriors. I think, who else was involved in that feud? The Nasty Boys, I think. They were wrestling the Nasty Boys at the time, right?
Harlem Heat, Nasty's, Road Warriors. Nasty's left the company or got fired. Road Warriors left to go to WWF. Harlem Heat was around. I'm not a big Harlem Heat fan for whatever reason.
It's because you're racist, you fuck.
I did not like Harlem Heat at all. I thought Booker T was good. I like the Ebony Experience in Global, but Harlem Heat, the Steiners were good in WCW. The match with the Road Warriors is really fucking good from Nitro. That's a miracle match. That match is one of the best impact matches you'll see. The Steiners, speaking of high impact, against Fire and Ice, which is Scott Norton and Ice Cream.
I remember that.
I really like those matches, Will. Those are, like, my favorite Steiner matches on their comeback. Like, anything else they did, I'm about, but I like the Road Warriors match, and I like Fire and Ice match. Everything else can fuck off. Like, I don't really know any. Like, Public Enemy was, like, they didn't really have much left. Like, I don't know.
Well,
I didn't really like anything else he did.
Well, then after that, you know, in 1996, and you can see this play out on my new 1996 yearbook project comp. If you'd want to pick that up, just contact me and I'll give you the details. But you'll really see the NWO forming, and that's what pretty much everybody in WCW, they were either in their self-contained feuds or they were feuding with NWO in some form or fashion. And so through 1996-97, it's pretty much either the Steiners are involved in number one contender feuds to fight for the belts, or they're fighting for the belts against the Outsiders. And so do you remember any of the feuds or the matches with the Outsiders, and have any thoughts on it?
I think I want to revisit. I think the Steiners and the Outsiders mix really well. So I'd actually like to check that out, because I'm a huge Click fan of any kind. So
I remember at the time they were just doing all the bullshit with the referees, where the Steiners win the belts at NWO sold out 97. Then the next night they have to give them back, and after a while it just got ridiculous. It's like, you know what? Just if you're gonna beat the Steiners, beat the fucking Steiners, and if not, then let them win the belts. You know, do something instead of just doing this endless cycle of matches with Harlem Heat. Or, you know, I know like Kevin Nash. I think it was Kevin Nash and Rick Steiner had a singles match after Scott Steiner. Did he get into a wreck or a car accident or got arrested? Something happened at one of those pay-per-views.
I don't know.
Yeah, man, I mean, it just got real convoluted real quick, man.
All kinds of garbage. If they were just on Steiner's Hall Nash, I think that would have been a good feud. But I just think too many other things were thrown into it. I want to see the Steiners against Hall Nash who sold out. That whole pay-per-view is one of the worst of all time, but for whatever reason, I want to see that match. So,
Like, you want to revisit it, just kind of see if your opinion changes without being, like, personally
involved in
the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Rick would have worked really well with Kevin and Scott. Scott Steiner, I'm not sure how he would have worked with the other two. Scott Steiner and Scott Hall seem like they'd be a good mix, too. So, yeah, I just want to check that out. I don't think I gave it a chance at the time, so I wouldn't be against rewatching some of that stuff.
Yeah. And then in 1998, the big turn, fucking the what Bill Watts wanted back in 92, Scott Steiner turns on his brother. And I remember the heat for this. The building was fucking huge, man. It was just fucking insane. When Scott turned, and they were in San Francisco, I believe, the whole fucking building erupted and were cheering that, you know, I mean, here it was, you know, this was definitely an NWO crowd, and they're cheering this guy turning on his brother, you know, and you know, granted, there was a lot of heat, a lot of excitement in the building, but it was for all the wrong reasons, man. And then we get the formation of Big Papa Pump. And who fucking knew? Who fucking knew Scott Steiner had this fucking, this built-in rage in him, this roid rage just ready to be released, man? I had no idea. No idea that he'd fucking become this angry man that he became, man. What are your thoughts on Big Papa Pump?
Dude, the whole thing with that is I didn't like the turn that much. I didn't like any of the matches. That was like a huge letdown. Like, Rick vs. Scott should have been like what Owen vs. Brett was. And it just wasn't. So it's like, eh.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like,
well, they did
a
lot of stupid shit there, you know. We're turning Buff Bagwell,
really...
fucking heel. And, you know. I'm sorry, go, Ralph.
Yeah. Yeah, Big Papa Pump, I never really got into that much. Like, he never really had the focus on his character and who he was feuding with anyway. The only time I really liked Big Papa Pump was when he gave...
What was that? Sorry, Rob, I lost you for a minute. What'd you say?
When he debuted in WWF.
Okay.
I thought he was awesome. Like, that debut was nuts. Yeah, but like... Within weeks, he meant nothing, but I liked his debut. His debut was a moment, you know what I mean? You remember that.
No, I'm going to disagree with you. I liked the character. I liked when he came to the ring fucking with a fucking tiger. I don't know who the fuck thought up that idea, but he walks to the ring with a live tiger. And I'm thinking, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, if you want to see it, it's on my Death of WCW set that I released this past year, and so that's something that you can watch. Scott Steiner walking to the ring with the fucking tiger, you know, and then, you know, I thought the promos on DDP, on Flair, I thought, you know, when he was just unhinged, clearly roid raging, just fucking going off on these old guys. I mean, I really enjoyed it, you know, for all the wrong reasons, obviously, but I still, you know, I thought it was enjoyable. I liked the matches with Booker T, he had a really great match against Goldberg that I really enjoyed. You know, and at this time, Rick Steiner was doing jack shit. Scott Steiner, you know, he was running with a shitty company, but he was still doing something. Rick Steiner was doing nothing except stiffing poor guys on the undercard.
Yeah, dude, that Goldberg match fucking is awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking probably one of Goldberg's highlights. You know, you talk about that match, the Sid match where Sid's bleeding all over the place, and the DDP match, you know, those are the highlights of Goldberg's career, but it is definitely something that I actually enjoyed the Big Papa Pump character. Well, you know, Rick Steiner after that, not so much. I didn't care if he turned face or heel or whatever, and then, you know, WCW goes out of business, and like you said, fucking Scott reappears and fucking in WWF. I didn't really care for that run. But, you know, like I said, maybe you did. What did you like about it?
Actually, you know what I liked? I liked Rick Steiner's run in 99 when they put him with Sid Vicious and Macho Man. Remember when Macho Man was doing that shit, Rob. You remember when Macho Man was doing pile drivers again, and, like, Rick Steiner was, like, a badass again, and he was with Sid. Like, I liked it a lot. I don't know.
I hated all of that stuff.
Well, I like it. Macho Man all roided up doing pile drivers. Awesome. Yeah, I like
and
that.
Fucking,
that's
nuts. And then Macho Man was fucking, you know, I guess somebody told me that he had, he had like hip surgery or leg surgery. I don't remember. Some type of surgery that when he did
he's
the elbow. Yeah, he had to land on the people to keep from fucking breaking his hip or something, you know. So, really fucking dangerous shit, man. But that was horrible. The fucking Macho Man coming unhinged, fucking, yeah. Fucking this big swollen guy fucking popping up in Spider-Man movies and shit. No, I'll
dude,
pass.
Roided up Macho Man is probably my second favorite Macho Man aside from Memphis Macho Man. Love Roided Up Macho Man. It looks like he was going to pop on live TV. It was crazy.
I remember when Russo had come in and Macho Man comes to the ring and he fucking goes fucking ape shit on Russo. And he's like, fuck you. And I don't think he said fuck you. I'll say fuck you. But I don't think Macho Man said fuck you. But he just, fuck you. I'm not going to do. And you're going to try and push the old guys out. And, you know, you don't know me. And he starts saying, I don't know, some catchphrase or something. And then he just walks out and he disappears from WCW forever, you know.
Oh,
but,
dude,
you know,
do you remember when Rick Steiner would go,
stuff,
if you don't like me, bite me.
Oh, gosh, man. Fucking horrible.
Fuck, that was
awesome.
About
as great as fucking Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holla if you hear me. What the fuck?
If you don't like me, you're, bite me.
Yeah,
still,
if you don't like me, bite me. At least that was a heel fucking catchphrase, right? Whereas Big Papa Pump was doing babyface catchphrases while he was telling the crowd that they're bullshit, you know? So... you know, there's probably a little bit of multiple personalities going on in that guy, but whatever. So, Rob, let's end this thing on a high note. We've talked for over an hour and 45 minutes, you know, fucking, you know, we definitely, I think, did the Steiner's career justice. But I want to end, you know, first, you know, what are your favorite angles you remember the Steiners being involved in?
My favorite angles, one is when Ole and Arn attacked Rick and Scott on the podium and Arn DDT'd Rick. As much as I hated their match, Arn DDT'ing Rick on the podium and Rick taking this crazy bump was one that I remember. Nasty Boys against the Steiners contract signing. When Nasty Boys showed up after Halloween Havoc dressed up as custodians and they bashed a thing of popcorn over Scott's head or some shit, that was funny. Steiner's angles, let me think. I'm sure I'm missing something. They're not really an angle team to me. They're like a unrelated team.
No,
well,
there
are
still
a few
memorable ones, man. We gotta mention the highlights, though. Yeah.
Varsity Club Rick Steiner thing, I'll end with that. I thought that was really good.
That was really great. I would also add the Varsity Angle breakup with Rick. You know, that was awesome stuff. And just to, like I said, capping it off with the title win against Rotundo when the crowd goes batshit. I to this day, I mean, you know, remember rewatching this stuff recently, and it was the Robin Green, Rick Dayton Robin Green storyline. I thought that was really well put together. And then for a woman to come out, like you said, as Bodacious, or was a woman you said was Bodacious? Or
no,
way,
Missy
man,
was Bodacious, but regardless.
Missy was Bodacious, but woman had the rack, okay. So when one woman comes out, then, you know, I really enjoyed that angle. Really, I have a fucking soft spot in my heart for retarded Rick Steiner, you know, talking to his hand. That was kind of silly, but, you know, we covered all that stuff. So, you know, I think people should check that stuff out when they get a chance. Now let's end it, Rob, on a positive note. Your favorite Steiner matches? Rob. Oh, well, I guess Rob got dropped. So I'll just say that my favorite Steiner match is obviously the Owen Hart and the Bret Hart Steiner match in WWF. I also know Rob loves that Nasty Boys match from Halloween Havoc. Looks like Rob had his phone dropped. So we're going to end the show right there. Well, there's not going to be a part two. You'll have to either listen to our next show to find out Rob's favorite Steiner matches, or you can just shoot him an email or personal message and ask him what they are, and I'm sure he'll be happy to tell you. I'm sure he's bummed out, man. This is 2 weeks in a row where he had some technical issues. More likely, Rob's phone died on him. So either way, guys, I appreciate you listening to the Steiner edition of Goodwill Wrestling. and stay tuned for next time. I just want to remind you that we will have some special guests coming up, but even if we don't, Rob and I will still be talking wrestling. All right, take care and good night.
This is Q-Tip with Sonos. I spent my life collecting thousands and thousands of albums, man. Now the kid down the block has the same collection I do. Am I mad? Am I upset about it? Nah. Alright, maybe a little. Control all your music with one app with Sonos. Find out how you can Sonos your home by clicking the banner below or visit Sonos.com.